Welcome to a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, the Heat get a win at home against the Jazz. We'll talk about how they did it and if the team has turned things around.
A big night from Hassan Whiteside, finally. Big plays by Dwayne Wade. How does this win impact the Heat's plans this season? Thank you so much for listening and subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here, as always, with David Ramil. We're recording this after the Heat beat the Jazz 102-100 on Sunday night. Several players with big games in this game. Hassan Whiteside and Dwayne Wade, most notably. But David, you predicted a bit of a turnaround for the Heat, right, going into this week?
Kind of.
And they've now won consecutive games for the first time since November 7th. Of course, they beat the Jazz after that Friday win against the New Orleans Pelicans. What are you seeing from this team that has them winning these close games?
Well, I kind of like the return of Dwayne Wade, to be honest with you. I think it's a little bit of a spark, another ball handler, somebody who's able to create his own shot, you know, something that Miami's offense has missed for most of the season. Not a lot of people that feel comfortable creating their own shot with as much ease as Wade has, even though he's been a little less than efficient at doing so. I think that's a big part of it. And as far as the night tonight against Utah, I mean, I think we have to give credit almost single-handedly, to be honest with you, to Hassan Whiteside. As big a game as Wade may have had and others may have had major contributions, Whiteside's overall effort is by far the best of the season, and something that I don't think we've seen since, I don't even know, I can't even recall, before the postseason, maybe since, you know, we saw hints of it during the preseason this year, but he didn't show that against Philadelphia. He had one game where he was somewhat evenly matched with Joel Embiid in the playoffs last year, but other than that, we haven't seen that kind of intensity where he's really giving an all-out effort. And we know there's some animosity between him and Rudy Gobert, the Jazz center, and obviously he wanted to prove a point, and that's the frustrating thing with Whiteside. I don't want to focus too much on the negativity, but nights like to this show that he's capable of these big games. He just chooses more often than not to display that kind of effort. But let's focus on the positive. He was really impactful, pulling down great rebounds in traffic, blocking shots, altering shots on defense more than anything, and looking very confident with his shot selection, taking good shots. Even, unfortunately, while he was in traffic, you know, sometimes he was double-teamed, but he was still in rhythm and hitting those shots at the rim, something we haven't seen from him. A little bit more explosive, too, when he was pulling up for a dunk. I mean, something, again, that we haven't seen because maybe there have been questions about his overall athleticism declining or maybe still being injured, but either way, he looked pretty good tonight against Gobert.
You mentioned the rebounds there. Had a really big defensive rebound over Rudy Gobert. He basically mossed Rudy Gobert late in that fourth quarter, where the Jazz Gobert had position, had boxed out for most of that possession, and the Jazz should have gotten that offensive rebound and an extra possession late in that game. But Whiteside just out-hustled Gobert and just used that athleticism that we just haven't seen a whole lot of this year,
right,
that peak athleticism, to grab that rebound. That resulted in the Heat's possession that ended in a Josh Richardson offensive rebound where Gobert failed to box out Richardson. So Whiteside outplayed Gobert late in this game, and I wasn't sure that was going to be the case, obviously. Like, this was the first time Whiteside played in the fourth quarter. He had missed the last four fourth quarters.
Right.
So the first fourth quarter in five games. And he played really well, and I was worried at one point in the middle of the final period there that Spo was going to take him out because Joe Ingles basically hit him with this, like, baby Euro step hesitation move,
yeah,
kind of fake pass to a rolling Rudy Gobert. And Whiteside basically just didn't know what to do. He's like a deer in the headlights and just didn't move. And then Ingles just went right around him for an easy layup. And I thought, okay, maybe the pace of this fourth quarter is getting out of hand for Whiteside. Spo's going to bench him here for Bam Adebayo. And if that's the case, you know, maybe this wouldn't be a memorable night for Whiteside. But credit Spo, he left him in there. He recognized he was doing enough rebounding-wise and rim protection-wise outside of that. You do have to blame the Jazz a little bit here. I thought they sort of blew it in the fourth quarter. I thought that they didn't really attack Whiteside in those high pick and roll situations as much as they probably should have and forced him to get off the floor.
Right.
But he did what he had. He did his job tonight, and you got to give him credit for that.
Couple things. I mean, you have to acknowledge the fact that Utah's had a very tough schedule to start the year. They've played 10 of their last 12 games on the road, including this being the third of a three-game road trip. So it's been a little difficult, and you kind of saw that fatigue set in. They had a good start to the game, one where I thought it was going to be a blowout against Miami, but things turned around relatively quickly for the Heat. They were able to storm their way back and keep things even. And again, even with Utah playing relatively well, they still looked a little tired, but Miami at least was able to capitalize. As far as the keeping Whiteside, you know, I think the more the positive among us will say, you know what, Spoelstra really saw that Whiteside had had a good effort performance and wanted to encourage him and keep him in there to kind of show that he has faith, as he has all season, and kind of reward him for that. The cynic among us would say, well, there's probably, you know, hoping that Whiteside would throw the game and then lead to a tanking situation. So I had that thought
and I tried to keep it down a little bit because I think Whiteside was playing well enough, and his plus-minus was a little misleading tonight because he was in there for a big part of when Miami just couldn't make a shot early in the game, and they were down 19 points. So that kind of sunk his plus-minus early in the game. But later on, you know, I thought he was really productive. I want to talk about that second quarter, too, because the Heat opened up trailing in that second quarter, and our friend Cooper Moorhead on Twitter pointed out that that was probably his best stretch of the season. 13 points, 8 rebounds and a block in one quarter, in that second quarter.
Yeah.
And that helped open up a lead for Miami, and or it got the game closer for Miami, and then, you know, Bam Adebayo, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow came in towards the end of the third quarter, and Miami actually got a 6-point lead near the end of the first half, and ended up leading at halftime. So that was a really big part of why Miami was able to battle back into this game and eventually win it. Other things that I want to talk about, Dwayne Wade, big fourth quarter from him. Had a couple of great moments. This is all we want this season, really, when it comes down to it, is just a few more great things that just to remember Dwayne Wade by. And he had that one play where he chased that loose ball, jumped 5 rows into the stands, and came out of the stands, didn't save the ball, came out of the stands, though, with a big smile on his face, grinning ear to ear. The fans were going crazy. I think it energized his teammates even.
It did.
And that was, I think, just one. And then obviously he had the game-winning free throws at the end. He had a nice driving layup that opened up Miami's lead late in the fourth quarter. He was Dwayne Wade at the end of that game.
Yeah, 2 of 6 from three-point range. Not bad. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But still a fantastic – look, he struggled a little bit with his shot. It was 4-15, but still giving maximum effort. And I think, you know, he did have 8 assists. So tremendous playmaking, as we've expected from Wade. And let's can I tip a hat to Wade there doing some incredible recruiting as he exchanged jerseys with Donovan Mitchell after the game. You texted me before the game even started that Donovan Mitchell really seems to be a big fan of South Florida. Am I mistaken in this?
So he's one of the better Instagram follows of NBA players, and he will often post from the road, you know, as NBA players are like to do. But he doesn't – it feels like every time he posts to his Instagram story from Miami, he posts the view from his hotel room in a very loving way. Oh. And that doesn't happen when he's in Utah. And it doesn't – I'm not seeing his road posts of the view from his hotel when he's playing in Indiana.
Or Cleveland, or LA.
I'm seeing it when he's in Miami. He enjoyed some sushi Saturday night. I know that because of his Instagram story, and now I feel like I'm best friends with Donovan Mitchell, which is what social media is all about.
It is.
So I'm just saying he really likes Miami, so I appreciate you calling that out. You know, Dwayne Wade is doing he's got this new tradition in his last dance to give away his jersey to the player, I guess, he deems most worthy on the other team after every game he plays. And of course it was Donovan Mitchell who has the comparisons to Dwayne Wade. And they're obvious and they're apt.
I mean, we have been unabashed supporters of Mitchell since well before
the one pick away.
Yeah. In the draft, I don't get too excited by the draft, as many of our listeners know, but I had sweaty palms in the hopes that Mitchell would slide all the way down to the Heat with the 14th pick. It's not that I'm saying, you know, I'm not critical of Bam Adebayo. I'm happy the Bam's on the team. but Mitchell would have been a very nice addition too. So either way, nice to see Dwayne Wade setting him up for a future free agency acquisition. And I love it. I'm all about Donovan Mitchell to the Heat at some point in 2020, 2022, whatever.
All right, let's get to some of your Twitter questions later on, but let's take a quick break here. All right, after our recaps, we get a bunch of questions from you, the listeners, on Twitter. We got a few to get to, so we're going to do it a little bit earlier in the show because we got this one. It's a loaded question, David, and so we're going to dedicate an entire segment to it. Greg writes in, "What a joke. These were must-lose games. Hashtag trying for the 10th pick." Now, we spent the whole start of this show, the whole first 10 minutes of this show, talking about how this was a very productive win for the Heat. This was an optimistic look for this team. But, you know, the elephant in the room is that the Heat still aren't very good. They're probably not going to be very good. They're not going to be any better than they were last season, right? And so that kind of is the dark cloud hanging over this whole thing, is what is the best thing for the Heat to do? And is it to win games like this? Because if you look at Utah, they're struggling this year. They had 10 wins going into this game. They had 11 wins going into this game. Miami had 8. If these are teams that are destined for the lottery, you kind of want to narrow that gap. Now, I do think the Jazz will play themselves back into the playoffs in the West, but this is when you're playing other teams that are kind of right there within one or two wins of you, and you want to tank if you're in the camp of tanking, then these are must-lose games.
Well, I just don't know if Miami's wired that way. I really don't. It's still an ongoing question, and I think obviously we can debate back and forth whether or not they should. And I guess Greg's point is that they should be trying to lose as many games as possible, and that might still happen. But, you know, I think we've made the comparison before. This feels a lot like 11-30 and then eventually 30-11, where this team, you know, doesn't play at a high level and then all of a sudden does find a way to do so. And I think they've already strung two wins together. They could potentially win a third against Orlando later this week. It could be the start of them making a comeback and becoming the team that we envisioned they'd be, a 45-47 win team. That's still in the realm of possibility. It's not like they could go on a nice stretch over the next 60 games and still find a way to come close to the record that we envisioned. Is that make them a title contender? Obviously not. And I guess that's where you have to kind of think about what the team's goals are, where they plan on being, and what they expect out of this group. And I think they're comfortable being somewhere in that 40 to 50 win range. And I think that's the very best case scenario for this group. So,
yeah, I think the best case scenario for this group is 45 wins, and that is going to take a major, like, 30-11 type, or what the Jazz did at the end of last season type of turnaround. I don't know that that's in the cards for the Heat. Spoelstra does have a tendency of sort of figuring out this roster in the second half of the season, but you sort of hope that, you know, given that it's the same team coming back, that it wouldn't take a half a season to figure it out.
Yeah.
And granted, like, injuries are a factor in that and everything. I don't think it's as big of a factor as I think some of the local media is making it out to be. I just, and or the team is even making it out to be. I don't know that these guys, I think the best players have been on the floor for the most part outside of Goran Dragic. And I think Dragic's absence has opened up other things for Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow. But
I mean, just just to kind of touch on that a second, you don't think that they can be a high 40 win team because they've got 60 games left.
No,
their record is 9-13. You don't see them possibly going 40-20 over that stretch?
No.
Okay.
There's no way. Well, I think
I think there's a way.
40-20, 20 games, 20 more games, 20 more wins than losses. I don't see it. This is
they couldn't win two out of three games. They could win two out of three games. I don't think they're going to go 30-30 over that next 60 game stretch. I mean, they've been missing Goran, who obviously provides a huge spark. They've been missing Tyler, who can provide a big spark occasionally. I think Wayne Ellington is not well suited for that starting position, and hopefully Rodney McGruder is able to come back into the starting lineup. You know, maybe I've been a little bit more positive about what this team could be overall because I just don't like embracing the tank all that much. But I do think that this team is capable of pulling together a pretty nice run to close out the season and get into playoff contention. I'm not sold on as many teams around the Eastern Conference. Look, I think either of those teams, Orlando could slip. Detroit could slip easily if Blake Griffin gets hurt. You know, they look good against the Golden State Warriors today, but that's not a done deal by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, obviously they're not in the top four elite of the Eastern Conference, but even Indiana without, you know, Victor Oladipo has struggled a little bit. And I think, you know, I think Miami has an opportunity to get into the sixth, seventh, eighth seed conversation.
I think seventh or eighth is probably the best that they can do. Maybe they go 30-30 over the next few games, maybe 35-25. I don't see them doubling as many wins as losses. I just haven't seen it from this team. Maybe I'm wrong. I just haven't seen it. You mentioned the Rodney Magruder thing there, and we should just mention he left the first half of that game against Utah with an ankle sprain, didn't come back in the game, but we don't know what his status is as we're recording this now, so that's something to monitor. But look, they play Orlando Tuesday to finish up this four-game home stretch. And they could easily be 3-1 in this four-game home stretch, but then they go on the road for a six-game West Coast road trip that is going to be pretty tough. And I don't know. To go back to Greg's question here, the tank is not on, and we've talked about this on the show several times, where we don't think that the Heat are tanking right now. They have the record that they have because they just haven't been a very good basketball team so far this season. And that might just be injuries. That might also be the fact that they don't really have any great players. That this is sort of a group of average basketball players, that's what it is. But I don't think that the tank is on. But I do think that, look, this road trip ends on December 16th, the day after. The last game of this road trip is the day after free agents who signed this past summer can be traded. And I think that that's a key date for this season, because all of a sudden you're able to trade guys like Wayne Ellington. You're able to trade guys like, and other teams open, it opens up other trade possibilities to other teams in the league. And while I don't think that the Heat have embraced the tank, I don't think they've even embraced a soft tank yet. I think that this road trip is going to say a lot about where they are in this season, what their plans are for the rest of the season, because I do think that they'll try to make the playoffs if they think it's feasible. But if they kind of just poo-poo this whole road trip and they're still not healthy, and it doesn't look like they're going to be healthy anytime soon, and somebody calls them, like a Philadelphia says, hey, we really need a shooter, we're going to offer you something nice for Wayne Ellington, I think Miami starts thinking about it, yeah, and maybe starts to break this thing up and look more towards the summer.
That road trip, I was not really aware of it, I'll be 100% honest with you. And it does look like it could be a potentially disastrous one, because, I mean, all these teams, look, with the exception of the Phoenix Suns, who, you know, are a little bit better talent-wise, you know, I would say that Miami could very easily go 1-5 during that six-game stretch. They've got two games in L.A., I mean, against the Clippers and Lakers both. They rematch with the Jazz at Utah. They go on to face a very, very good Memphis team. A little bit of payback, I think, from the Pelicans waits them at the end of that trip in New Orleans. So that could be.
And then they come home to play the Rockets and the Bucks. And the Rockets are a team custom made to give the Heat fits, right?
Yeah.
With these guards who can just sort of torch them from the point of attack, and a Clint Capella type center who can just jump right over Hassan Whiteside. Those are the kinds of players that have given the Heat problems this season.
It gets a little more depressing when you think of it from that perspective, because they could very easily lose 8 of the next 9 games.
Well, not depressing if you're on the tank train.
Sure,
David.
Sorry.
Optimistic. I mean, go watch Zion Williamson. Look, I know that you and I were big Donovan Mitchell fans. I'm starting to like this Kevin Porter Jr. kid from USC.
Okay.
Just saying.
All right.
I like him. Romeo Langford, Indiana. I like these scoring guards. It's just, you got to dream. You just got to dream big. Let's get to some more of your Twitter questions after this break. All right, a couple of more questions from Twitter. Jeff writes in, what do you think Dwayne Wade's three-point percentage will be for the remainder of the season? He's hitting those opens up a lot. What do you think, David? What do you think his percentage is going to be? Because we were looking back at what he's done for his career when you found his career high.
Yes. Look, Dwayne Wade right now shooting 39.3% on three-point attempts, 4 per game, hitting about 1.6 of those 4 attempts per game. That's really significant. He's having a fantastic year from the perimeter. It's a career high in every aspect there, attempts, makes, and, of course, in percentage. And that's kind of the scary thing, because we were looking through his 16-year career and we were kind of debating. I think you were a little bit more optimistic. You thought he might be in the mid to high 30s. I went low 30s, and we were both wrong. He is a 31%, his best season from behind the line, 31.7% in 2008-09 season, where he was shooting almost 3.5 attempts per game and just hitting one of those per game. So not a very good three-point shooter. No surprise there. We all know that Dwayne was hesitant to take that extra step behind the perimeter. He's known for taking long twos, getting to the line and drawing fouls, and not really showing a lot of prowess from the three-point mark. But he seems to embrace it. I don't know if it's just an understanding of where he stands at this point of his career. Maybe he's finally realized that the league overall has shifted as far as how the emphasis in the three-point shot has changed.
Well, I think what it is that he wants to play as many games a season as he can, and he realizes that he can't play the way he has his entire career.
Oh, but man, that should have come like four seasons ago, right? I mean,
sure, yeah. Yeah, but I think maybe just being on the brink of retirement, he was like, you know what?
Why not?
At least before I enjoyed getting to the rim, right now I want to be able to like get on the, I just got to make sure I can walk all 18 holes at this point, you know? And but look, we were looking back, and every year that he's shot more or averaged more than three-point attempts a season, he's shot better than 30% from the line, which is, you know, it's not great, but Dwayne Wade has an understandably low bar from three-point range. I don't think that, I'm not saying that volume equals efficiency. I'm just saying that there are seasons where he's feeling it. And I do think that this season, which happens to be his last season, he's just feeling it. And he is taking 4 3-pointers a game, but possessions are up across the board, right? Especially yeah. compared to that 08-09 season. Possessions are way up. Teams are playing faster. The Heat in general are just shooting a bunch of threes. They're averaging 33 three-point attempts a game. And just so I just think by virtue of him being in this, he's ramped up his 3-point attempt average by half a 3-point attempt versus his career high. I don't think it's that big of a jump, to be honest. I think he could easily be out there taking 5 or 6, but we've talked about this before. He's kind of taken a back seat to the Richardsons and the Wayne Ellingtons and the Kelly Olynyks as far as the shooters go. And he's like, you know what? I'm picking my spots. These are my spots, especially late in games. I'll be very open to taking these. I'm going to go ahead and take them.
So to his question then, where do you see his percentage finally bottoming out as far as the rest of the season is concerned?
He's at 39.3% would be an insane leap for him. I think we see it somewhere around 35, 36%. The stroke looks good, man. I think it looks good. Like, it really wouldn't surprise me if he's – because he's – he's not just taking them, you know. Oh, he's picking them.
In tonight's game, Utah was in a bit of a run. Dwayne, on a fast break, I think, went to the left corner, the short corner, and wound up putting a 3-point shot to kind of kill that break and give Miami a little bit of a cushion as they were trying to hold on to a slim lead. And I think those are the kinds of shots that we're seeing. They're in rhythm, but
he likes that shot.
I'm sorry.
He likes that shot. He does. So it's the first time he's taken that shot this year.
Yeah, and they're strategic, though. I think that's your mm-hmm. overall point, is that he's not like sabotaging offensive possessions. They're in rhythm. Again, things that we would have liked to have seen 4 or 5 seasons ago when he had a little bit more athleticism to kind of balance out that 3-point shot. So
I kind of look at him like as a poker player with that 3-point shot. Like, maybe he's not playing 8-10 off suit, where realistically you can get, you know, a good flop and hit something on that.
He's kind of going in audience. With you lost. Oh, you lost.
Well, it's late in the podcast. They're already gone.
It's midway through the podcast. If you come on for the first 10 minutes, you're missing great content, guys.
he's every time he takes a three, he's like, he's got a pair of queens. You know,
he's just feeling the other half. Now we're just talking to ourselves.
All right. Maybe. Okay, let's move on. Claudia asks, what are we going to do next year when Dwayne Wade retires? Cry mostly. But look, that's what, going back to Instagram, that's what we have it for now. Thank goodness. We'll just follow him and his kids on social media. I think there's a real question about what the Heat do late in these games, though. Like, who's the closer? We talked about this at the end of that Hawks game. Wade deferred to Josh Richardson, said close it. Richardson didn't. And so these last couple of games, Wade has. And I'm not saying that Josh Richardson is getting punished for that, but Richardson at some point he's kind of the guy, or whoever the Heat ends up taking in the lottery, if that person pops. If they take somebody in the lottery, we'll see.
No, even but that's if they get Zion Williamson, he's not closing games for Miami next year.
I don't think Zion Williamson is that kind of player anyway.
Yeah.
I think that he's more of that kind of facilitator, not a scorer. I still think, like, hypothetically, in a world where Zion Williamson is amazingly on the Heat, he's still probably driving and kicking to an open Wayne Ellington if he's on the roster, or a Josh Richardson type or something.
Man,
like that.
You've got a lot of faith in this kid, man. I am surprised.
You got to go watch a Duke game, man. I'm telling you. Roberto asks, I'm convinced the Vice City jerseys are cursed. Change the jersey and we win. They look great, but they need to be put away. Am I wrong? This is a really good point, and it's a major concern, and it's not just from fans. The Heat have literally gotten they've been spooked by these jerseys, David. They had them on the schedule to wear them for these last two games against New Orleans and against Utah. They did up the court. It's all Vice style. Everything's there. But they came out in the all reds, which, you know, is my favorite jersey, mm-hmm. and I think that has also something to do with it. That why they've won. They're 2-0 in these last two games in all the all reds. I don't think it's a problem with the Vice jerseys. How's this for a hot take? If they would have came out in the white jerseys, I think they don't win both of these games. I think the red jerseys are a lucky charm, and I'm not sure that the Vice jerseys, even though they're 0-6 so far this season, are a cursed jersey. I think the red jerseys are just lucky.
Okay, I can see that. I'll top that and say, look, I don't even like the Vice jerseys to begin with, but I'll even go a little step further and say that I think when they wear the Vice jerseys, other teams feel like they're shown up a little bit, and that's why they're 0-6 for the jerseys.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. All right, so we got to a bunch of the Twitter questions after the game. We have a bunch of questions in the mailbag that we still have to get to. We usually do the mailbag on Mondays, but because we had the late Sunday game, we wanted to give you the recap. So the mailbag will be pushed to Tuesday's show. But that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and subscribing on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or whatever you use to listen to podcasts. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.